IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of All Things Policy. I'm Manoj Kewalramani, and today I have with me the keen China watchers of Takshashila's Indo-Pacific Studies program. And we are going to be talking about the upcoming US elections and Chinese perspectives on those US elections. We now know that it's going to be a repeat of Trump versus Biden for the White House in November this year. Campaigning is already underway. Biden's State of the Union address sort of kicked off the campaign for him. Trump has been on the campaign trail for a while because of primaries, which he eventually clinched the nomination through. But what has China been thinking about all of this? Because the relationship with the United States is the most consequential relationship for China. And it's been bad for the last 8-9 years. Trump is the man who started the trade war with China. Biden is the man who has sustained that trade war in some ways, but also intensified what Beijing says is all-round containment of China. So I have with me my colleagues Anushka Saxena, Amit Kumar, and Rakshit Shetty. And they've all been looking at this and trying to understand what are Chinese perspectives. So I'm going to go to each of them and we're going to try and delve into this particular issue. So firstly, folks, welcome to all of you.
Thanks.
Okay, so let's begin by going to Anushka in my very patriarchal fashion, ladies first. So Anushka, tell me, if you were sitting in Zhongnanhai and if you were watching these elections that are unfolding, who would you prefer given if you had a vote? Who would you prefer? And given that TikTok is no longer going to be around in the US, perhaps your vote has dwindled. But who would you prefer?
Yeah, thanks for that, Manoj. Very chivalrous. Just at the outset, I'd like to clarify that in my perception, the facts that the US will continue to support Taiwan and support decoupling from China one way or another, legislative bills, arms sales, influence activities, alliance building, so on and so forth. And the other fact that China will continue to deploy a diverse basket of gray zone and coercive tactics to keep the pressure on Taiwan building up, or tactics within the global south to build a balance favorable to itself. These are facts. It's fact that these have become a feature of the regional order in the Indo-Pacific in specific, and the world order in general. So they're not going anywhere, no matter who the president in the US is. They're going to remain same, and they've demonstrably remained same under previous Trump and Biden presidencies. The only thing that will be different, and perhaps if I was sitting in Zhongnanhai, that would be the reason why I'd prefer Trump over Biden, would be the trust. If he does, Trump will assume presidency at a time when the world has a very sour taste of him being in office, simply because he is non-committal, unlike Biden, who has attached a deep value commitment to everything, hence the statement surrounding the US under Biden promoting a Cold War mentality and these statements coming largely out of China. And that's also why, even though both Trump and Biden have had a tough rhetoric on China, we see countries like Philippines becoming more vocal under Biden than Trump, simply because it's a matter of trust, because Biden can put on a better, harder show than Trump can, even if they virtually do the exact same things, right? Like arms sales to Taiwan, for example. Under Trump, arms sales to Taiwan were even more than perhaps they were under Barack Obama during his pivot to Asia. And under Biden, these arms sales have been much, much lesser because he's not been able to get a crucial $19 billion package through the Congress. But at the same time, what everyone remembers remembers about Trump is how he said that, you know, Taiwan is a little tip of the Sharpie pen that he keeps in his office, but China is that big oval table. How Trump has said, even last year in a Fox News interview, that President Xi was his friend in his previous tenure, and he'll continue to be that, and he only wants good things for China. So I think precisely because of the rhetoric that breaks off trust between key allies of America, China would perhaps enjoy having a Trump presidency more than it would Biden, even though they would do virtually the exact same things, you know, economic tariffs, hardening the stance on Taiwan, so on and so forth. But the alliances and the trust will be missing under Trump. And it already is, you know, everybody's already expressing a lot of paranoia. Then perhaps it will be under Biden.
Okay, so from Anushka's point of view, it should be Chinese preference would be Trump ever so slightly, basically because of the geopolitical impact of a Trump presidency on American allies and the impact on trust with regard to American allies. Rakshit, do you, if you're in Zhongnanhai and if you are advising Xi Jinping, and if you were planning the influence operation in the U.S. elections, whom would you be preferring and in whose favor would your influence operation be going on?
So Manoj, for me, really, I mean, the candidacy, I mean, the election itself is a single largest threat for me, right? I mean, because both the candidates are talking and acting, you know, really tough on China. And for most of the Chinese scholars themselves, the choice really doesn't matter. But it really helps to understand how, if I'm in Shanghai, how we look at both of the leaders. And they are really, well-defined, I mean, described in Chinese social media, where Trump is described as Chuan Jiangwo, meaning Trump the nation builder, where the nation in question is China. But it is also important to note that these narratives are the narratives that are being spread by the nationalists and the hawks of China. And the same narratives have been trickled down. And when CNA Insider and Voice of America conducted their survey in 2020 and 2024, we see a similar trend where many of the participants in Beijing concluded that Trump is better for China. And the narratives were in tune with the dominant nationalist narratives. Where they referred Trump again as Chuan Jiangwo, Trump the nation builder, So it really helps how China looks at this issue. But for me, if I have to choose one president, it would be Trump, because again, as Anushka said, I mean, Trump ruined relations with the allies where he question the NATO's payment obligation. And recently also, Trump said to the Hungarian PM, Viktor Orban, that he would not give a penny to Ukraine, right? And also, Europe should pay more of the war costs. So, his bonhomie with Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un also. I mean, Trump is precisely the sort of leader China knows how to deal with. I mean, he has a huge ego and thinks only he can resolve problems, right? Through deals that he thinks can only make. He really overhypes and underdelivers. In 2019, Trump believed that he alone could get North Korea to curb his nuclear weapons program by meeting its leader. Again, no results in that case. And now recently Trump claimed that, you know, he would end Ukraine war in 24 hours, but he still doesn't provide a plan publicly. And I mean, I really take the point that Trump's tariffs on Chinese goods in 2019 were really groundbreaking, but it is also less remembered that he also entered into a trade deal with China, which proved unsuccessful. In exchange for a modest cuts in the tariffs Trump had imposed, China pledged to buy $200 billion in American exports in December 2021. But the Chinese never came close to keeping that promise. So I think even though Trump is really unpredictable, Biden has hit China where it hurts the most. I mean, in terms of critical technology, semiconductors and all, right? But Trump again swings his way all around and really isn't very, very specific about where to hit China. So I think as a Chinese, I would prefer Trump over Biden, where Biden is taking allies together and hitting China where it really hurts the most.
All right. Thank you so much. So, Amit, the question that you have, which the other two have sort of articulated, that Trump would be preferred. And in a nutshell, Rashid's argument is that, in some way, China would prefer the bull in the China shop as opposed to somebody doing precision work, which Biden has been doing, you know, the painstaking precision work. Also, Rakshit talked about Trump's proximity, Trump's sort of alleged proximity and alleged affinity for Vladimir Putin. Would that be a positive from Beijing's perspective, or would that be something that they would find slightly problematic? Because, you know, if the US and Russia could, over a period of time, iron out their differences, if the war in Ukraine were to have settled, and lots of dreams, lots of these fantasy writing that we see, which talks about, you know, pulling off a Kissinger, but this time with Russia, in terms of dealing with the competition with China. Is that much more probable when you have Trump as opposed to Biden, who is ideologically obviously confronting Putin? How would you sort of look at all of that?
Yeah. So when I was thinking of this question, so I had a few parameters to, you know, decide as to which candidate would China prefer, and Russia did figure as one of the parameters. But to quickly sort of pitch in my opinion as to why China would prefer Trump would be because if you look at the bilateral relations in isolation, I think there's no question that China, of course, it was Trump who started the trade war in 2018. And if you look at, foresee the economic situation, economic relationship between US and China under Trump, there's no denial that China will economically hurt more under Trump. And he has already promised to impose 60%, raise tariffs to 60% across the trade basket, right? So if you Rakshit talked about that Biden has been tough on critical technologies, but I'm very sure if Trump comes to power, he'll be even more. There have been some concessions that Biden has been amenable to, but I'm very sure that if Trump comes to power, his idea of relationship is quite transactional, even with his allies and partners. So there's no reason why he'll leave China out. And I think on the economic front, the relationship would be much more strained for China. So on economic front, at least, I think China will fear Trump. But what the Chinese can find solace in is that Trump will not fear from, will not differentiate between allies and partners and adversaries, right? And he's prepared to treat his allies and partners at an equal footing as he would, you know, treat his adversaries. And for me, in this competition between the US, and China, this great rivalry that has been unfolding in the past one decade and will likely determine the future of geopolitics in the coming decades, the greatest strength that the US has is that of its allies and partners, something that China lacks. And this transatlantic alliance or partnership that we refer to, this helps the Americans by distributing, even though Trump accuses the European partners of not paying their cut, but this does help America project power beyond its regional influence area of influence, and distributes cost among the powers, and that usually helps the Americans to project power around the globe. So what the Chinese will be looking at is if Trump, during his first term, Trump did manage to hurt the trust and displace the trust. And if he manages to continue, on that path, and there are cracks which appears in this American system of alliances and partnership, I think China will be more than happy, because then that puts America on an equal footing with the Chinese, wherein even the Chinese do not have any partners or allies to rely on, except for Russia. And now this brings Russia into the picture. So, of course, I agree that Trump has had some sort of bonhomie with Russia and Putin. And he just a few days back, he said that he'll allow Russia to invade all of Europe and that he'll lift sanctions on Russia. And this, if he manages to, this is all speculation. We are just speculating on this issue. But if he manages to do all of these, it'll be interesting in how it impacts China-Russia relationship and Russia-US relationship. It will definitely give some respite, I mean, in my opinion, to the Russians and Putin. And Putin may be amenable to some concessions in return, possibly. And maybe it will free Russia from China's stranglehold. I mean, we'll have to see. But yeah, Trump does have a capability to impact change on the China-Russia dynamics at least people in India like to talk about. Something, we have been talking about for quite some time that in its competition with China, US should desist from heavily focusing on Russia so that, it can focus its diplomatic capital on Russia alone. And it also helps us in India's balancing game between the US and the Russians. So yeah, Trump does have that capability to influence the dynamics, India-China-Russia dynamics and US-China-Russia dynamics, and that's all.
All right, so complex answer. There are certain things which Trump would be better at, but some in which there might be potential challenges. I want to ask all of you have assumed that the next Trump presidency, if it happens, would mean a lot of instability and perhaps even a lot of unpredictability. All of you have said that. Is that something that China desires in a world particularly where, they are obviously decrying protectionism and so on and so forth? They obviously see that external demand is going to weaken. If everybody turns even more inward because of a next Trump presidency, what does that do to China's external development environment? If the United States, say, pulls back much more from the Middle East, and you see this war between Israel and Gaza escalating, or if you see more spillover effects, does that place far greater burdens on China internationally, for which it might not be ready, or it might not want to commit the kind of resources? And while at the same time also impinging its external development environment, whether it's in terms of resource availability, whether it's in terms of investment security, enterprise security, or whether it's in terms of access to markets. So in that sense, would Trump be something seriously detrimental? Quick, just brief thoughts from all of you, and then I want to ask you one final question around India.
Okay.
So Anushka, let's begin with you.
Right. So I think, Manoj, you've raised a very important point about stability. And I think that is precisely one of the key disadvantages that China might perhaps see in a Trump presidency. Because, and let's start with the example that you took about international pressures, right? So we've discussed this before, in the Middle East so far, for example, with combating bombings that are conducted by the Houthi rebels in the Red Sea, the blockades that have been launched by other non-state actors in the Mediterranean, all of these have invited a very sharp response from the US and its maritime security alliance of 20 odd countries, right? And China has virtually refrained from this. It has sent out kind of for-show naval escort task forces, but they haven't really done anything except for argue that we're here to secure commercial sea lines from the Chinese interest perspectives. And I think one of the reasons why China has been kind of held back on this account, aside from the fact that its whole approach to intervention in the Middle East has been very non-committal itself and purely based on some of it based on, attempting to stick it to the US by supporting the Palestinian cause, some of it based on its will to build a better relationship with the Gulf countries. But mostly it's been non-committal. And I think one of the reasons for that is because the US has been actively playing a leading role in managing and mitigating some of these issues that have a more global, more humanitarian and more economic impact, right? Now, under Trump, as we've seen with his statements on NATO, with his statements on defense, and with his statements on pulling out of alliances that take up a lot of budget in wars that America doesn't want to be involved in, China may feel the pressure of having to step up its game and actually contribute to maintaining security in some of these active regions, right? Similarly, with the Russian example, no matter what the nature of the relationship between Putin and Xi Jinping may be, I don't think it's in China's interests to have a Russia that becomes increasingly more aggressive and engages in aggrandizement. And if we see Trump act sort of non-committally to NATO, for example, arguing that, we will only continue to support the organization because if all the members spend 2% of their GDPs as budget, then we might see Russia getting emboldened. And I think that's bad for stability from the Chinese perspective. But on the other hand, if Biden gets reelected, and you know, this is a historic fact, something that Chinese scholars also understand, that in their second terms of presidencies, US presidents have lesser pressure to be very hardline and proactive in their foreign policy because they don't have to feel campaign pressures again. And this may, and even though the second presidency of Biden would mean that US's decoupling strategy will become more mature, they will know exactly what to do and learn from their mistakes vis-a-vis technological sanctions, but it would also mean that China would know who to talk to, how to react to some certain things, and how to maintain open lines of communication, because they've been through their tumultuous phase, and the second presidency is likely to mean that there'll be relatively more stability in the relationship. But with a changing president once again, it's likely that China won't get to see that.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
So if Xi Jinping wants more stability, Biden might be the better option, because he's somewhat of a more known commodity, and they have been able to arrive at some degree of some sort of mechanisms which have engendered some stability. Does Amit, Rakshit, each of you, do you sort of disagree with the argument that if stability is the desire, then Biden would be better? And secondly, is stability something that is desirable from the Chinese perspective at this point of time, or is it better to have your adversary shoot themselves in the foot even more? Rakshit, let's begin with you.
So Manoj, so China would not comment like publicly on which president would it prefer, right? But because again, it would be, people would say that it's interfering in US elections, right? So, but if we closely look at Russia, there was an interview by a Russian TV correspondent who asked Putin, who's better for us, Biden or Trump? And Putin within a flash replied, Biden. Now, remember that Biden labeled Putin a murderous dictator, a pure thug, and, you know, also accused of having him a craven lust for land and power. Whereas Trump called President Putin smart and a genius person. And he has also even suggested that he would encourage Russia to attack any NATO member, just like Anushka mentioned, that fails to pay its bills, right? So then why did Putin say Biden and not Trump? I mean, my understanding is it to deny Biden campaign a good campaign against Trump. And similarly, even I really believe that China would prefer unpredictability with Trump's administration rather than a surgical, precise initiatives by Biden, like his recent summit on democracy versus autocracy, his Chips and Science Act, his Build America, Buy America Act. So I really think that China would prefer to deal with a person who it can, I mean, with his personalized, with their personalized high-stake diplomacy, deal with, not with a president who is very precise with his actions. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Amit, do you agree with that?
Two diverging points. So when you talk of instability, I would like to look at both economic and political instability. So if you look at let's come to political instability first. So China as a revisionist power, I would think, would prefer political instability to project its, and it suits their narrative both domestically and internationally. Domestically, they have been harping about that the external environment is not so great, and therefore there have been so many problems, and therefore you should be prepared for the prepare for hardships, and etc. And internationally, it would mean showing other partners, other countries and states, that how unreliable a partner that US is, or global leader US is, and therefore that allows for space for Chinese to swoop in and take its its respectful position in the international order. But when one looks at economic instability, I think that again under Trump would be something that they'll look for, and something they'll not want, because of late we have seen the Chinese exports have surged in the past few years, and given the economic situation domestically, There have been attempts by the Chinese governments to diversify their imports, exports out of their away from their traditional destinations such as the US and the and Europe. And if their the economic instability sets in and this round of protectionism and industrial policies become more popular, as it's already getting popular, but gets a fillip under Trump administration, it would not bode well for the Chinese if they have to look for the economic policies and how the tapping into the export markets. So, I mean, I don't know, it could go either way in that sense.
Okay, and if I was the leader, I would have said, if you're going to give me complicated answers, how will I make my choice? At the end of the day, I think that I agree with you that, you know, as much as you might crave stability because you want to ensure economic development and, you know, the shifting of the economic model, and for that, global stability is needed. At the same time, you know, it's juxtaposed with the idea that there are unprecedented, profound changes taking place in the world. And that, I think, is a top-line observation. So, you know, I think that it's a pivotal moment for China, and I think they realize it. The party realizes it for them to sort of, I wouldn't say overturn the global order, because I don't think that's in their interest, but at least make the selective revisionism that they need to make, make inroads in that sense. And to doing that, American credibility and undermining American credibility is far more important than necessarily stability. And no longer is economic growth simply the priority. So I agree with that assessment. I want to come to all of you with one final question. Given that we have seen, you know, what we've discussed briefly about what China would like and why. And like you've all said, the answer is complicated. But I presume if I'm going to ask all of you to go to the ballot box today the Communist Party, you would probably vote for Trump. In that sense, what would a potential Trump presidency, given the benefits and the pitfalls for China, mean for India, given the nature of the US-China relationship and how that will change? So the impact of a Trump presidency on US-China relationships, which you've talked about, how would that benefit or adversely affect India? Would it be good or bad? So again, Anushka, I'll start with you.
Right. Thanks for that. So I think... continuing in my list of unchanged dynamics and facts, I think under Trump, we've seen some emphasis on continuing to support India as a partner, despite the fact that, you know, I talked about Trump's non-committal nature, so on and so forth. We've seen one of the largest U.S. India meets the Modi-Trump, Howdy-Modi meeting happen under Trump. We've seen the US's first Indo-Pacific strategy come out under Trump, and it calling India, you know, a pivotal partner in US's approach to the Indo-Pacific. So, you know, all of these things matter, and they kind of prove that the Trump presidency was invested in having India as a partner. And subsequently, you know, China retaliated to that as much as they have retaliated to, say, Biden's emphasis on partnering with India and all the initiatives that have been launched under Biden. I would say there has been a continuation of policy under the two presidents, from Trump kind of pivoting to India as a crucial partner, to Biden undertaking initiatives that were unprecedented in a decade, you know, defense co-production initiative on critical and emerging technologies. And I would say there is some role that China is playing in it, in that US is increasingly realizing the importance of India as, you know, a balance of weight against China, especially in the regional order. And we're seeing increasing cooperation under the Quad on all fronts, right, from cybersecurity to joint maritime exercises, maritime security exercises. And it's like a continuation of policy. And some would argue that now US-India relationship is going to move to stages where the China lens is going to be important, but it's also going to be dominated by the maturity of the partnership in and of itself. And how China is going to react to that is going to be the exact same as well. You know, when it comes to China's reactions on India's foreign policy, I go no further than looking at Liu Zongyi's arguments. And, you know, under Trump also, he argued that, you know, Trump isn't cautious in dealing with India, because it was during the Modi-Trump meeting, it was within those 2 days that Trump announced a new tranche of technological tariffs on against China. And Then Liu Zhonghi again commented on Biden's lack of kind of critique of India for its quote-unquote human rights abuses. And I think in that sense, the fact that Eric Garcetti, the U.S. ambassador to India, has recently made a statement about how religious freedom is a cornerstone of the values-based partnership between India and the U.S. May even be comforting to China, because this is something some of the hawks of India-U.S. relations have been talking about in China. And so, but at the same time, as I argued, I think U.S.-India relations have evolved from dynamic to very patient, especially under Biden, with India's stance on Russia-Ukraine as well. It partially also has to do with India's own vocal stance on the world order and the fact that it does not want to be dictated anymore. But I think despite the existence of the China lens, the relationship is going to continue, and China is going to continue to react to it with some critique and criticism. You know, we've seen statements coming out against U.S. sharing intelligence vis-a-vis the line of actual control, U.S. Turning Quad into an Asian NATO and deploying India as a pawn in its Indo-Pacific game, so on and so forth. But as much as China may have been an initiating factor, now the relationship is at a more mature stage. And I think the continuation of policy is going to be the same under Biden or Trump. And China is going to continue to react to it as they have.
Okay. Amit, are you as sanguine as Anushka about policy continuity? I really wish people in Washington would hear this podcast. It's such a remarkable difference from the anxiety that you hear from people sitting over there about, policy confusion, flip-flops, unpredictability. And, I go back to Anushka's first remarks also, where she talked about, policy continuity and how different the world looks when you're sitting in another part of the world. So, Amit, do you agree that there will be lots of policy continuity from an Indian perspective? So, Trump or Biden doesn't really make a difference to India's equation, given the dynamic of the US-China competition?
Okay. Again, two things to look at. One is that between both the Republicans and the Democrats, two things are common, right? There's a bipartisan agreement over the fact that China is their primary adversary. And the second, that in its rivalry with China, India is a key partner. So that is something that both the parties agree on. Now, and therefore, I like to believe that on the security front, and because in India-US relationship is the foundation is provided by India's relationship, their respective relationship with China. I think on the security front and defense partnership and hard security front, there'll be continuity. But what I'm apprehensive of is continuity on the economic relationship. So Trump obviously has his domestic political agenda that is making America great again, bring back jobs, bring back American companies back. To investing back in America. And under Biden, we have seen with the narrative around decoupling and de-risking that India has emerged as one of the alternative destination, and a few American companies have showed their interest in investing in India, and there's a focus on friendshoring and relocating some of the supply chains and companies back in India and diversifying away from China. That is something which I'm afraid about, that might come under stress under Trump. And India has also launched a series of industrial policies to support industries and companies in electronics and semiconductor industries. So this is, and Trump has even in the past raised questions about India's decision towards these industrial policies. So this is something which scares me. And I think we might see some hiccups on at least economic front. And continuity would not be the same. We might not see continuity from Biden to Trump when sees the economic relationship between US and China.
Okay, Rashid, I'm going to come to you with an additional point. So Amit's views that we might not see continuity, particularly the economic domain, and economics is key to strategic affairs. So there might be implications of that. But in terms of hard security, we are likely to see a certain degree of continuity. And Trump obviously did, it was under Trump that, our defense partnership strengthened also further. But then that was a continuation of policies over the years. We've talked a lot about how Trump's election could mean, could amplify credibility issues, you know, in the minds of allies and partners with regard to the US. It could also leave the US deeply distracted because of domestic turmoil. Would that credibility problem not exist in the minds of folks in New Delhi also? You know, it doesn't take a lot for Indians to start thinking that the US is unreliable, right? And there's a lot of history around this, and it's very easy for that narrative to catch hold. Would that unreliability also not impact how we view China-US competition and therefore our relationship with China?
Right. I mean, of course, I mean, really, one cannot assume that Trump would cut and paste his China policy from his first term. But he really, I think he won't change his personality. And based on his track record, it really seems fair to predict that if Trump returned to White House, he would start out with bombastic rhetoric against China. Then with a little bit emphasis on his personalized diplomacy, he would try to appease Xi and Putin. And, you know, he might also look for another trade deal, no matter what the outcomes. So the issue is whether, I mean, so just like Amit said, I also agree that on the economic front, we would have a challenge because Trump has this mindset that India is a tariff king, right? And he also frequently lashed out at India's protectionism. So, I mean, India's efforts to negotiate a trade agreement with the Trump administration did not really succeed. Since Trump left the office, the US has also become a more important economic partner for India, trade and technology ties with America. And given the high commercial stakes in this relationship, we really need to see how we can creatively think a new framework for trade cooperation with Washington, no matter, what our insecurity with the Trump administration would be regarding China and Putin. So, yeah.
All right. Anushka?
Right. So I just have a quick point to make about this. There was a reference to the free trade agreement in both Amit and Rakshit's arguments. And where is this free trade agreement under Biden too, right? It's not there. It wasn't there under Trump and it wasn't there under Biden. And these things take a long time to negotiate. And the negotiations happened under Trump as well. And to say that the fact the free trade agreement wasn't reached at during the Trump presidency is a failure of the India-US relationship under that presidency wouldn't be fair, because then you can extend that argument to Biden as well. The other thing is why I argue that there will be relative stability in the India-US economic relationship, no matter who the president is because there is an understanding in India that there will have to be an adjustment to some of the whims and fancies of the US when it comes to the global economic order, right? We say that India was really upset with US's sanctions on Iran vis-a-vis oil import and that US did not extend any concessions to India. But that was true of both the Trump and Biden administrations. And subsequently, India made efforts to cut down its oil dependency on Iran when it realized in 2019 that it was not going to be given that free check. And that has continued under Biden, right? It hasn't been, even though India made comments in 2022 arguing that, you know, it doesn't accept the fact that there's this dictation of rules from the West, it has continued to cut down its oil imports. So I also think there's going to be this continuity because India is going to make an active effort to kind of bend to some of these whims according to American interests, because it wants to continue to maintain that relationship, continue negotiations on key economic fronts and have relative stability in the relationship. So I think so policy continuity angle doesn't just come from who the president is in the US, but also from the fact that India has its own imperatives vis-a-vis its relations with the US.
Thanks. In part, I do agree with that. And I do. I think that policy continuity also happens, and a lot of American interlocutors will tell us this, that yes, the president matters, but the president does not do everything. There is a system that is in place that also operates, and there is institutional memory and institutional continuity, which tends to be difficult to upturn in an instant. But then, you know, one has to wait and see, depending on whether Trump does what he's been saying, that he'll be firing a big chunk of the American government and civil service. You know, so what does that do to the entire system? All right, so we've had a fascinating conversation. And I think this is a snippet of what the debate has been and what the debate is likely to continue to be over the next 7-8 months as we head into the US elections. There are clearly pluses and minuses from Beijing's perspective. And that depends on what we think China's interests are and what
But what ultimately matters is what the Chinese leadership believes their interests are, you know, whether their interests are in terms of stability or, you know, some degree, or whether they were internalized this deep sense of competition, which therefore requires some sort of zero-sum approach to the relationship. And I think all that really matters. But I think one thing that we've all been able to agree on in this conversation is that a Trump election does have a serious impact on American global credibility. Now, one would argue that Biden's also had an impact on American global credibility. With allies, there has been better dialogue, better efforts. But in the global South, there has been some degree of credibility erosion, particularly in the context of this war in the Middle East right now. And whether that sustains is another matter altogether. So it's complicated, but this has been a fascinating conversation to at least peel through some of those threads to try and understand how China would view the elections in the year ahead, in this towards the end of the year. So we'll probably try and come back to this conversation later on in the year, as we've heard a little bit more from each campaign in terms of what they want to achieve with regard to China. And then we'll try and also see how Chinese scholars and social media has been debating the election. And then we can perhaps revisit this conversation. So thank you so much, guys. Thank you so much for your views.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much, Manoj.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.